Over the years, I have found copywork to be an invaluable tool, and I use it very intentionally for a lot of language arts processes. And today I'm going to share with you some of those processes. They include handwriting, of course, also retention of information that you're studying, spelling, grammar, punctuation, literary devices, and even reading comprehension. And I'm going to go through each one of those separately. I also want to try to weave in here what it looks like for a younger child and how it progresses as that child grows and becomes older. So hopefully we cover both younger children and older children. And a lot of this depends on when you start introducing spelling, when you start introducing grammar, punctuation, literary advice, etc. Let's start with handwriting. In the beginning, most of our copy work is going to be for handwriting. And this changes as you go. If you are introducing cursive in third grade, then you will start doing the same thing that you do in the beginning with print, and most of the copy work again will be, or the copy work for cursive will be for handwriting. So this is an example of the beginning print. I want to say this was first or second grade. The way that I'm making these lines for her to print her letters on are with our block crayons, which are just perfect for spacing. So I'm just taking them and running them through here and then choosing a different color and running through here. And for her handwriting, early handwriting on this, we are using her beeswax crayons for this that are held special area. These are only for school. And they're only for school because they're a little bit expensive and higher quality. We do have other sets of crayons, but for schoolwork, these are the ones that we use. Now, in the beginning, we are starting with letters, of course, and then eventually we can move into copying words. And the amount of the copy work starts small and gradually expands as the child gets older. We want to keep it within their capabilities and within their tolerance, I guess. We don't want to make it more challenging so that it's not fun anymore. Okay, so this is the lettering, and I wanted to show you when we started doing words. One of the word sets that we did, because we were also memorizing this, are the states of the verbs, state of being verbs. Am, is, are, was, were, be, being, been, has, had, do, does, did, shall, will, should, would, may, might, could. And I think, yeah, can, could. It turned out really beneficial for us to memorize the state of being verbs even before they really knew what a verb was in elementary school with my son. We started it in first language lessons when we were doing the chants for the state of being. And when I realized how beneficial that was for him, I repeated this with my daughter at an even earlier age, and our copy work, some of our copy work, began to be the states of being. It's still handwriting for the most part, but we're increasing the amount of letters in one setting by having them copy words. I want to pause here a moment and talk about how I go about choosing our copy work passages or sentences or words. I really like to integrate whatever we're studying at the time, or in this instance, what we will eventually get to that will be useful to us, but we aren't quite there. So I'm looking a little ahead, but most of the time it's integrated in what we are studying. Now, I don't do this all the time. Sometimes I am looking for something fun and easy And at that point, one of the things that I really like to do is bring something like this, which was just handwriting skills that were quotes from the Harry Potter movies and books. But we have also used poems, we have used song lyrics, we have used quotes from her favorite movies. Like it doesn't always have to be integrated, but I do find that to be really helpful. So I'm going to give you some examples of the integrations that we have done before. This quote is from a book that we were reading at the time. I pull lots of copywork passages for us to do from read alouds that we're doing or books that she's reading. And this one was a quote from Galileo when we were doing our Renaissance. This was a quote from Chief Seattle when we were studying our Native America block. This was a sentence that I made up because it was one of the main goals for me for her to understand how diverse Africa was. And so I wrote the sentence, "Africa is a continent with many different countries and diverse people," for her to copy. And this one, which is maybe my favorite, was a poem from Midsummer Night's Dream. Not a poem, but a prose, a monologue by Puck. And here is another one that we did. And this was just a lot of fun, partly because we really enjoyed this block and reading the different monologues and pieces from Puck, who's a fabulous character in this play, but also because the amount of exposure that we personally have to copy work lends itself to memorization, and as such, I use that in a tool for helping her to memorize certain poems. So you can see there's lots of different sources. I often get it from books that we are studying. I make relevant sentences up. When we are reading read alouds, I often look for passages that have spelling things that we have been using in our spelling lessons, or literary devices that we have been learning about, or grammar and punctuation that we have been learning about. So I'm using that as spacing and interleaving and review for whatever material that we're studying. Let's talk about spelling. Often when I pick a piece, I pick it because it has several words that we have studied different spelling rules, guidelines, and those words fall within that. Or I want to bring up a different aspect or a new lesson. And so I'm using that passage of that new lesson. So they can be for review, or it can be to teach a new concept. But I'm often looking for passages that have the things that I'm looking to teach or review in them. Now, when they are small, that looks very differently than when they are older. And it really depends on when you start spelling. So this doesn't even need to be included until you start introducing spelling. So in this case, what I do is go through and choose a few words from the passage. So here you can see, and these are copied by her, that I have taken out the words that we're going to use. I usually have those in a list, and we usually go through that list with the spelling words and breaking them up into syllables, and then separately breaking them up into root words and prefixes and suffixes if they have them. So you can see here that with these spelling words, we are talking about where we will break up the syllabization. You can find this in different areas. Logic of English is a curriculum developed this way, and also All About Spelling is developed this way, where they show the places that you break up syllables, and also they show the most common rules for spelling in the English language. I think a whole list of those are available on Logic of English's website, and I'll try to leave links to both of those curricula for you. But here you can see that we have separated them by the areas that they separate with the syllables, and we've placed dots in between them. And in addition to them, this, we're also talking about open and closed syllables and what sounds that they make, the vowel sounds for those open and closed syllables. We've done the same for language before, Lakota, and so forth. So we go through this, and we talk about root words such as healthier or healthy. I think we're spelling healthier here, and what we're going through is finding the root word health and then any suffix, in this case is Lee, and then moving towards that, like healthy, and then understanding that that Y changes to an I when we add the ER to create healthier. So we're going through each of the steps from finding the root word to all the suffixes a little at a time, so that we can talk about how you add suffixes to the end of a word. And you can also see we didn't use the plus signs here, but important also has suffixes, prefixes, and a root word. The root word for this is port, and here we're doing M as the prefix and ant as the suffix. We use a lot of rooted in languages word study for this kind of thing. Sometimes when we have a particular word that comes up, we will do a whole series of word studies on that root word. For instance, we used miss here, and we do word families for miss. This one has all different kinds of submit, and then this section has intermit with different endings, intermit, intermission, intermittent, and this one is all about emit, omit, remit, and so forth. So we do different word families, and then we come up with a word matrix, with mit being our root word, all our possible prefixes here and all our possible suffixes here. And if there are additional suffixes that can be added, those go here. But that's a little bit more complex when you're first starting out. This would just be simple prefixes and suffixes with the root word. Now, this is something that we did not add till fourth and fifth grade. So in third grade, we were studying basic spelling. And we went a little slower on this than I think a lot of people go. We didn't really start spelling practice until handwriting and reading was well underway. So this was like late second grade, the beginning of third grade. I will say spelling and reading are like the flip side of coins, and so you can use that to enhance reading skills by teaching spelling. Here is another example of where we went through and looked at root words with prefixes and suffixes. In this one, we are breaking down detective, and with this one, we're breaking down insignificant. And one of the reasons that we do this is because it's so important in our spelling abilities. There is a series of guidelines for spelling for most of the English language, but also because we have Greek and Latin roots, this plays a significant role. This word study with the prefixes and suffixes plays a significant role in understanding how to spell. One of the ways that we use copy work is what I call paragraph analysis, and this is a big part of how we're teaching grammar and punctuation in my house. So sometimes this is review of a grammar block that we've gone over. In fact, a lot of times it is that, and we do it in different ways. One of the first ways, and maybe the more fun way, is that I often do scavenger hunts for her. So if it is something that we have studied in spelling, in grammar, or with punctuation, then I will often bring attention to the passage by asking her to find certain things. In this case, I've used find a compound word, find alliteration, find a hyphenated adjective. So these are the different ways. Now, in the beginning, when we're doing this, this is pretty complex. I want to say this was fourth grade, maybe. She is writing in cursive pretty well, so this is probably fourth or fifth grade. So this level of scavenger hunt is pretty complex, and we're going over things that you probably wouldn't go over in second or third grade. So in second grade, if you're working on spelling, you might go with different spelling rules that you are learning about in your scavenger hunt. For instance, here we're talking about silent E words, and I've had her list at least three silent E words. And here we're using O-U-G-H, our spelling, and so I'm having her look for those words, and then we are reviewing the different ways that O-U-G-H can sound here. As they grow and progress and you start studying different things like grammar, literary devices, your scavenger hunts can be can include those in your process. So in this one, you can see we've used adjectives because we've started introducing grammar. We've talked about compound words, which would be part of our spelling. And then we've talked about the J sound, which is that a G can make. So we have, that would also be part of our spelling. The proper nouns would be both grammar and punctuation. If we're talking about proper nouns, then those proper nouns need to be capitalized, and that's both grammar and punctuation. Here, I've asked her to find a metaphor, and that would be a literary device. Here's more punctuation. This is some of our word study with find three words that have suffixes, and more word study, more grammar parts of speech, and more spelling. So these are a great way to bring in different aspects of language arts on the same thing. And it's fun because, you know, it's like an Easter egg hunt. They are looking for something, and she tends to really enjoy these scavenger hunts. Sometimes rather than doing a scavenger hunt, we will do what I call a paragraph analysis, where we are going through and just doing a notice and wonder of what we notice, where she is looking for the different things that she has been studying so far. And in this case, I don't necessarily give her any particular thing to look for. I'm seeing what she notices in the passage. As always, we color code, as you can see here. Our metaphors are dark purple, underlined in dark purple. The earth is our mother. The rivers are our brothers. And the descriptive adjectives are underlined in pink. So often we do lots of color coding. Here's another one that was a little more simple of a paragraph analysis, where we are doing a notice and wonder and finding the things that she notices, several things that she notices. And you can see at the bottom here that we've done some spelling work. One of the things that we often do, we do Michael Clay Thompson style sentence analysis. And rather than going through and writing verb, etc., we color code those. So everything that you see in orange here are nouns, and each of the yellows are verbs, the green are articles, and the dark orange are pronouns. Here's another example of us doing sentence analysis where she's just taking the appropriate marker, and at this point we have used specific colors in our silly sentence game, which I still have right here, so that we are color coordinating our silly sentence colors, the parts of speech, with our colors that we're underlying with. So even though we don't have a guide here, a key to tell you what color is what, we already know that all the orange are nouns and all of the yellows are verbs and so forth. So the Michael Clay Thompson sentence analysis has four different layers. First, they go through and identify each part of speech. So that's the first layer. The second layer is to go through and find the subject and the verb and the parts of a sentence. And then the third layer is to go through and find prepositional phrases. And the last layer is to find clauses, independent and dependent clauses. We can also use a child's narration for copy work. And I do this often, but not all of them. And I think I talk about this in the summer seminars, which is available in the Zoom replay area, about how I do narration and illustration. But if it's a super long passage, and I definitely don't do it with every passage, like you can see here when we were doing the medieval area, this was a particularly long, elaborate narration. Definitely wasn't going to make her copy that one. But we can use something that we want to retain for copy work into the notebook. So here I've used her narration as copy work. I do that a lot with science because this provides spacing. So on one day we may be learning about the concept. On another day, she is drawing an illustration about that concept. And on the third day, we're doing a narration. Now, our narrations have a lot of back-end work. Now, this narration is sixth grade level, so it's going to be much more simplistic for a younger child. And we don't have to go through the editing process for every narration, even if we're using it as copy work. Particularly in science, when I'm focused on scientific concepts, I usually don't go through the editing process with the copy work because we're doing copy work narrations and using that narration for copy work every day. But for history, I often use it for writing as well. So what we will do for this is that she will write out a draft. If they're younger, they are giving you the draft verbally. We want to make sure we're using a narration that fits their capabilities. If it was like the Beowulf that's 2-3 pages long, we're not going to use that for copy work. For younger kids, it's like one sentence, two sentences. Older kids, you're looking at paragraphs, and as they get older, you're looking at several paragraphs. So this is her narration, and it's gone through the narration process, which I think you can find in the video. And here she's writing on one day, writing the narration on one day, and then we are cutting it up, copying and pasting it on another day, and then we are going over editing, like spelling, punctuation, capitalization, etc., on a different day. And then on a completely different day, we start our copy work, right? Where she's doing a sentence or two into her notebook at a time. In sixth grade, she's probably doing the entire passage in one sitting. But in younger years, we're doing a sentence or two at a time, added into their notebook until it all works. So you can see, again, the exposure to this material is elongated and repeated and spaced. So that's why I enjoy using not only the narration, but also copy work in general, integrated with whatever we're studying, because that helps with the retention of the material that we are studying. So another aspect of copy work that I like to do is reading comprehension. And this can be done a couple different ways. I really like some of Rooted in Languages work on reading comprehension. One of my favorite exercises that they have that I use all the way up through high school is in the book, on the page, I think is what they call it. And what you do is have a piece, an excerpt from the book, our copy work passage. And as they read the copy work passage, line by line, they're writing their own thoughts and reactions to the work. Because when we're reading a passage, intuitively, maybe not even consciously, we are interacting with that passage with inferences or past knowledge or information that we are bringing to whatever the author is writing. And so this really brings to light that information. They start this exercise with a book, This Is Not My Hat, and I feel like that is the perfect book for this exercise. One, because the narrator of that book is not a reliable source, so that's a lot of fun. But this is one way to do reading comprehension. Another way to do reading comprehension is to have questions worked out beforehand that are like analytical kind of questions, also making sure that we're getting the point of the passage, and go through those questions first. Any vocabulary in the passage that they don't know, and then read through the passage and then have them answer the questions. Now, a lot of this can be verbal and through discussion, and a lot of that does come naturally in discussion. This happens a lot in our read alouds when we're pausing to talk about a literary element that we just noticed or what we think's going to happen. And sometimes, like this week, I introduced a new literary element, foreshadowing, because I happened to see it in the book that we're reading. I want to talk a little bit about the timeline of this, because we're not doing all of this on one day. In fact, we're breaking up each of these exercises into one short lesson a day. Usually that's the most that I do for language arts, for copy work. So in the beginning, we may simply read through the passage. Usually if it is a passage that I'm pulling for from literary work or our studying, then we are going ahead and analyzing that passage after we read through it on the first day. But if we are using it for memorization, reading through it several times may be the only thing that we do that day. Or we may read through the entire passage and then focus on the first two lines for memorization. On the second day, we may pull out the spelling words. So in that case, she may find a list of spelling words that I have pulled out of the passage, and then we will go through them one by one. I like doing this way because I like the interleaving. If you want a quick refresh on the interleaving, that is when we add different kinds of things that we are studying, not all of the same kind. For instance, in spelling, that would look like instead of doing the entire list with words that double a consonant to preserve the vowel sound, a soft vowel sound, we would do a list of words that have several different spelling rules. And I like that interleaving because even though it feels harder, we know that the learning is more from that. So I am picking a few words that I think would be helpful from the passage. And then on that day, we are going through the words and we are dividing them up and analyzing each one of the words. The following day, I may have her copy those words all on her own, just copy those words to help her memorize them. The day following that, we may use that passage as a paragraph analysis or a scavenger hunt or the Michael Clay Thompson sentence analysis structure. And then on the following day, we may actually begin our copy work. And then for the next few days of that, she will copy the passage that she sees into her notebook or onto a sheet of paper. Following that, or even sometimes before we write the entire passage, we will have blanks for her spelling words where she has the passage. And like I said before, at this point, we've practically memorized the passage with the exposure that we've had for it each day. So she often doesn't even need me to read the passage to her. She can just fill in the blank with the spelling words. And then possibly after that, we will be doing a in the book, on the page analysis where we're looking at reading comprehension. So those are some of the ways that we use copy work. Very intentional in the choosing of our copy work, very intentional in working through our copy work. We don't always do every aspect of the copy work that I have shown you. In fact, we rarely do all of them. It really is dependent upon what I am looking to teach for a given passage. For instance, if I want to focus on grammar, I may choose a passage from our read aloud, and we may do some spelling words from it, sentence analysis or a scavenger hunt, and we may do one or two sentences from that passage for sentence analysis and then the copy work. Now, if I'm doing narration, that process is going to be a little different. We may just do the narration. Sometimes we go through the editing process, sometimes we do not. And then the editing process itself takes several days. And then after that, we will take, depending on the length of the passage, 1 or 2 days with that narration to put into the notebook. When I'm doing reading comprehension, I'm usually choosing a passage all on its own. I may pull that passage from information that we are studying, like a book that we haven't read or a book that we have read that I want her to have a deeper understanding, and we will mostly focus on the reading comprehension. So we won't go through the grammar analysis or the spelling or the scavenger hunt. For that, I'm working on reading comprehension, and so I'm choosing a passage that works for that, reading comprehension, whether it is literature or nonfiction of some kind. and working in that. So I'm not using all aspects of this copy work all at the same time, because my goals at certain times are slightly different. Sometimes I'm using it to teach language arts. Sometimes I'm using it to teach reading comprehension. Sometimes I'm using it for narration and what they're studying, for comprehension, internalization, and understanding of the material. And sometimes I'm using it for an understanding of scientific concepts. So we use our copy work for lots of different reasons. And that's why I'm using some aspects of what I've shown you today for some things and different for others. Very rarely, I can't even think of once that we've used one passage to do all of those things. I'm usually breaking it up into smaller, and besides that, doing all of that, even in seventh grade where we are, I don't feel would be efficient or sustainable for her interest level. So I'm breaking those up according to what I'm teaching and also what her tolerance and sustainability is for whatever assignment we're doing. So those are the different ways that I use copy work in our homeschooling. You can tell by this video it can be a very flexible tool. And I want to reiterate that I very rarely, in fact, I don't think I ever have, used all the aspects of copy work in one sitting. I'm very intentional about my focus of what I'm trying to teach at that time, and I use one or two aspects of copy work for that teaching. I hope the video was useful for you. As always, let me know if you have any questions. You can leave a comment, contact me by email at della@thebeautyofplay.com, or reach me in the community area or through the contact form on your subscription page. Until next time, happy homeschooling.